Hello, fellow book lovers, and welcome back to the Bibliovert podcast. My name is Jacqueline, and I'm here with my best friend, Allie, and we love reading and talking about books. The beginning of every episode is always spoiler-free, but then we will be getting into spoilers and our thoughts for the book. This week, it just felt right. We had to dedicate this episode to Bethany. Oh my gosh, first off, we love you because you are the sweetest, kindest, most amazing person ever. But I also know that you got an arc for this book and have been anxiously needing to talk to people about it. So now that it is out, we just had to dedicate this episode to you. So thank you so much for being such a sweet friend, for being so kind and thoughtful and wonderful and truly just an amazing, amazing person. So we hope you enjoyed this episode and we can't wait to hear more of your thoughts on the book. This week, we are covering Hook, Line, and Sinker by Tessa Bailey. If you have not already, check out the first book in the Bellinger series. We did a podcast episode over it. It happened one summer. So definitely check that one out. But Allie, what'd you think, babe?
We talked about this in the It Happened One Summer episode. How I wasn't sure how, if this book was going to feel a little bit more like middle school, high school.
Yeah.
Just based on our brief descriptions of the characters, Hannah and Fox, before we started reading their book, it was not that at all. It was so detailed and so complex, and it genuinely felt like both characters were... I enjoyed being in both of their perspectives. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I read it a little bit differently because I read it in smaller chunks because I was reading it while I was on vacation. So it was like in small spurts versus I typically read these books in longer settings where I'm getting a lot of it in a condensed amount of time. I ended up giving it, I think, 4 stars. I did like It Happened One Summer better simply because, and this is a good problem to have, I wanted a lot more from the back half of this book. There was a lot that I felt like needed to happen for both characters over a longer period of time that I wanted to see and didn't get to see it. And it felt, the ending felt almost abrupt. Not in a bad way. I really loved the ending. It was so sweet. But I would find myself, I finished the book, and then as the day went on, I would be like brushing my teeth or doing my hair or doing something, and I would be thinking about, man, I'm excited to keep reading Hook, Line, and Sinker. Like, I want to be reading it more. And then had to remind myself, no, you finished the book. Yeah. It's over. So I wanted a little bit more from the ending.
Yeah.
But not in a bad way. In the, it was going so well and I needed it. I needed more to it.
Yeah. But totally understandable. I loved this book so much. So much. So, I really felt like I connected with Hannah's character a lot. I don't know if you would agree with this. You're much better at this than I am. But, like, to me, it seems like she might be an Enneagram 2, which I am. And so it was just kind of one of those, like, everything that she felt very logical to me. And so that was a lot of fun getting to read that. But then also, on the other hand of it, I was like, I want to be more like her because she is such a selfless and thoughtful character. She's so steadfast. And I wouldn't even necessarily see it as like stubborn. I would see it as like this, I have this conviction and I'm staying in it kind of way. And I just respected Hannah so much. And then I also, one of the things that I really loved about it was that it felt like typically, obviously this is a major stereotyping, so typically though, I feel like it's very common for, I don't know, I think I'm going to back up and say it this way. What I liked about this book is that it kind of shook up gender norms that we typically see in books. And so, for example, part of Fox's backstory is that he had a lot of sexual expectations put on him. And I think lots of times we, as females, feel that from a young age. Not saying that men can't go through that. Mm-hmm. But I think lots of times, like, that's just something that is very prevalent for females. And so that rings true. And I think it may be depicted more frequently in literature or other forms of media. And then with Hannah, this isn't really much of a spoiler, but she is like, she makes up her mind, she sticks with it, and she's like, I mean, I am here for the long run. And I think oftentimes we see that more often written for male characters. And so I kind of liked the switch up that happened. Mm. And so it definitely kept me on my toes, and I just really enjoyed it. So there were a few things that I agree with you. There's one thing, and we'll obviously talk about it when we get to the spoilers, that I wish happened at the end. Because I feel like I may have needed that clarity on, like, okay, how's this going to work kind of question. So I think I would have liked to see that happen once, you know, the ending kind of started to, like, wrap up. And there may have been a few things that felt like it dragged a little bit for me, but I think my love of Hannah and her character and relating to her and admiring her, like, overwhelmingly was more positive than those few, you know, little, oh, I would have liked to see that kind of moment. So I actually liked this one more than It Happened One Summer, which I adored. But I don't know. I just, like, it was so sweet and I just loved it so much. So it was a 5 out of 5 star mm-hmm. read for me. And it just, I don't know. I'm excited to reread it already. So I don't know. It was just something special.
Yeah.
It was sweet. So let's go ahead and jump into spoilers. But real fast, if you have not read these books or heard anything about them, originally Tessa Bailey wrote them. The first book, It Happened One Summer, is about a girl named Piper, and she wrote it to give Alexis Rose from Schitt's Creek her happily ever after. And so it is, Piper is this very materialistic girl who moves to this small town in the Pacific Northwest. And it's like, as Allie likes to say, Deadliest Catch meets Schitt's Creek. And so anyway, absolutely hilarious, delightful characters, and also surprisingly deeper and more complex than, like, I would have prepared for. And so this book is from Piper's younger sister Hannah's point of view. And so it's kind of like her story. And it's wonderfully different than It Happened One Summer, which I think was a pleasant surprise for me. Mm. And something that I actually ended up, like, because I was kind of like, how do you top that? Like, how are you going to beat it? But it was so different from the other one.
It was very different.
That it didn't feel like they were competing against each other, you know? So I just, the vibe was still there, the aesthetic was still there, but it was still its own unique story, which I appreciated. So anyway, getting into spoilers. So if you have not read it, highly recommend it. They're super, super fun, quick, little spicy reads.
You do not have to read It Happened One Summer to read Hook, Line, and Sinker. Uh-huh. It just helps.
Yeah.
You could easily pick up on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to read just Hook, Line, and Sinker.
You also don't have to, like, watch Schitt's Creek.
So, yeah,
like,
agreed.
Feel like that's worth stating as well. But yeah, let's dive in.
Yeah. Should be a little spicy.
Yeah.
Speaking of spicy, this book was not.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
But not in a bad way.
No.
We're talking to Tessa, and I'm sure it'll be clear in the Tessa Bailey episode. But she made it very clear, and I appreciate that she did this, that because of Fox's trauma surrounding sex, she could not include spicy scenes until it was appropriate for his character development. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated the heck out of it.
I agree.
I think it was the correct move on Tessa's part.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about how it's like almost a reverse of gender roles. For me, it was getting a lens on how toxic masculinity mm-hmm. impacts men.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of how toxic masculinity impacts women and how it impacts our rights and our successes and just growth in general. this book gives a good perspective of how toxic masculinity is toxic for men themselves, yeah. and yeah. like how men are victims of it.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically when it comes to hypersexualization,
yeah.
Which Fox from a young age was very hypersexualized by his parents, by his teachers, by everyone around him. And so this book walks through that a lot. And as a result, there's not a lot of the typical spice that we kind of expect right. from romance books nowadays. But it wasn't to the detriment. It was to, right. it was to the success of the story and I to agree. The success of the characters. So mm-hmm. if you read the description of like, oh, they kind of got this like womanizer bad boy and you're expecting a more spicy book than It Happened One Summer, you are not going to get that because it goes through the journey of why is he labeled as a womanizer? How does he come out on the other side of it kind of thing? So it felt very appropriate. I really enjoyed the way it was mm-hmm. done. However, my feeling why I took off that star of like I wanted more on the back half of the book.
Right.
If there had been more space on the back half of the book to do more development and more growth and show more of the journey and progress over time, it could have, you could have seen more of the journey through.
Yes.
There was a lot of leading up because she does, what did she describe it as, a slow burn?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of slow burn in the front and I would have liked a lot more how do they burn throughout the back of the book yes. rather than leading up to the relationship. Yes. I would have liked to see more going through it.
Yes. There was also one point of the book, I think it was like literally one sentence, so I could be reading into this so much more than like anything that Tessa intended to put into this book, but I almost also wonder if potentially Hannah could have been more asexual. Mm. Because it talked about how sex was not really something that was, you know, on the forefront of her brain.
Yeah.
Very frequently. It was, she kind of mentioned that could be several months before she would even, like, think about it. I also think that played true to the way that Tessa wrote it.
Agreed.
That instead of having a high frequency of sex or, you know, things like that, it felt more authentic to Hannah's character mm. of, you know, that sex was something that was probably going to be less frequent.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I think I kind of appreciated that. I also agree with the fact that because Fox did take sex and tried to
weaponize it.
Right. And, like, not in, like, a bad way, but, like, in a trauma he's protecting response. Himself yeah. way. That I was glad that those scenes ended,
mm.
And like that it didn't ever progress.
Culminate.
Because I feel like it was then able for him to like, Hannah was aware of it. She wanted to like help him work through it. So I think one of the things that I loved so much about this book was that I never felt icky
mm.
in those kinds of ways of like, oh man, like that's not how, necessarily how I would respond to that, or I would want my partner to respond to me in that situation. And so I don't know, like I think I just appreciated it. This is also the first time ever that I've cried during a smut scene. And it wasn't even really smut. I mean, it was... when she like went back to the apartment mm. and he followed her and he was trying to weaponize, you know, sex so that she would look at him differently. And when she was just like, you're enough. I don't know what it was about that, but the like repetitive, nope, like you are enough. Not, you know, Fox, the womanizer, not Fox, like the good time, like just Fox, period. Like you are enough. Literally sobbed, just like sobbed. So I don't know, like I didn't find myself missing anything like yeah. that. So I don't know, I just thought it was really great. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Fox's journey, because I think there is a little bit more to unpack
yeah.
in regards to that. Hannah's still very complex and wonderful, but I think maybe there's a little bit more to unpack with Fox. So yeah. tell me your thoughts.
I needed Fox to go to therapy.
Mm.
There's not to say that a partner can't have a significant impact on your growth or your healing from trauma, but what Fox went through was not just like a, oh, this is a small, it's not like, for a comparison's sake, Brendan experienced the loss of his wife and kind of a couple of years of reclusiveness, and the struggle that he went through in that grief process wasn't necessarily, I'm sure he could have gone to therapy, but it was something that he essentially had the ability to work through, and it wasn't negatively impacting other people. It was very inwardly turned. Fox's trauma from the beginning of his life is so significant and so layered and complex that it's not something that I would be able to unwrap on my own. It's not something I think Hannah is able to unwrap for him. And he is obviously struggling that he hasn't been able to unwrap it himself. Mm-hmm. And so I needed Fox to get to a point where he, or Hannah encouraged him to receive professional help.
Right.
Because he works so hard to fix it himself.
Yeah.
And it's clear he doesn't have the tools or the understanding to unpack it all or to have healthy coping mechanisms and healthy growth tactics that could be given to him if he were to see someone professionally for it. And I needed there almost to be a longer span of time in the end of the book where Fox goes through that journey, and then we see the results of things happening in the future and long term, both positive and negative, because therapy is not like a one shot, you get to the fixing point kind of thing. He's still going to struggle for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years of his life. He's going to continue to struggle because it has been his entire life leading up to this point. So I wanted more than just the final day at the end, because it really is a singular day, less than a 24-hour period. He has one conversation with his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And while that I feel like is a good catalyst, I don't think it's the end of that story.
Right.
And so I would have rather that conversation have occurred somewhere around 50 or 60% of the book and the rest of the book being about, over time, what are they struggling with?
Yeah.
How is Fox building his reputation and feeling secure in himself and feeling secure in his relationship with Hannah? Eventually, things like that, the struggle in a relationship is not one-sided. Hannah will probably reach a point where she struggles with his insecurities and she doesn't do it in this book because I think it is a short period of time and she is steadfast the way you were saying. But there will probably come a point where Hannah is like, I need you to trust yourself and I need you to trust us and that I'm here and that what other people say doesn't matter. And I would almost like to see that conflict with them and how then they work it out as a couple. There's just so much more that happens after the end in this story before the epilogue that I wanted to be privy to.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it. And I think that I would have been, because I love Fox so much. Mm-hmm. I think Fox airs more on the Enneagram 4 side, whereas Hannah's the Enneagram 2. And so I connected a lot to Fox. And the way he goes in circles emotionally in his head and just around and around and around and around and around and there's no solution. That's how my brain works. So I would have loved to have gotten the privilege of watching him grow throughout that journey.
I agree. I think that's probably I don't even want to use the word frustration, but I think that was like the crux of the one thing that I wanted more from, because, it wasn't even like I didn't like how the book ended. It was more, I felt like the book ended too early.
Yes.
And I think like you were kind of saying that as well, because I feel like when I finished it, I was like, just like you, okay, well, Fox's insecurities are not just gonna like, oh, they're all solved now. They're all done. Like, I needed to see how now that Fox and Hannah are in a relationship, how, like, what about those moments that he's like, my reputation is negatively impacting you right now? Like, what do those conversations look like? What did that situation look like? How did Hannah respond? How did Fox respond? And, like, I know that they moved to a different town and it was like a midway point between Seattle and Westport. And so they kind of like had the opportunity to have a fresh start, but I almost wish that they had just stayed in Westport. And, like, I like the fact of, like, moving closer for, like, your spouse or your partner's work. Like, I'm all for that.
And I don't get me wrong. Getting their own opportunity right. to start fresh. I like that.
In their own space. But I wish that it wasn't, we're leaving because my reputation's so bad and I need to, like, instead of I'm going to fix, I mean, because he's still going to have to go to Westport every day to work.
You I know? Would like to see those conversations exactly. with the crew members and Brendan.
Exactly. And I think, like, them having Brendan and Piper's support behind them and, like, getting to have that encouragement and that community and that foundation of then, like, changing the minds of everyone.
I wanted that fleshed out a little more.
I think Fox deserved it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, he's putting in the work. Give him the reward. You know, like, I wanted to see, like, his crewmates respect him and be like, yes, we want you to be our captain. Like, I wanted that conversation of them being like, we realize how, and I think, like, even Fox says this in the book, where even he has a little bit of the responsibility of, like, playing into yeah. the conversations, mm-hmm. which, obviously, like, yeah, you know, of course. But I think, like, when he finally, you know, sets those boundaries and is like, this is who I am, like, this is who I want to be in this relationship, having those conversations with his crewmates and then hearing, like, no, like, we don't only respect you as, like, a human, but, like, we want to work under you as, like, you being our captain. I really wanted to see that because, like, you fall in love with Fox and then I feel like you don't necessarily have this, like, full circle moment of being, like, Fox has had such a hard situation in life that is heartbreaking. You want to see a win for him. But yeah, I just felt like so much of my heart just broke over and over and over. And like his mom flinching. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then finding out why, like it just, I mean.
Ugh. Fox, finally you get a glimpse that he starts to believe in himself.
Yes.
And you want to see that other people start to believe in him too.
Yeah.
And you don't get, I mean, Brendan happens off page and right. overnight essentially and it's yeah. like you can't, he's been bugging him for months about this
right.
you know that I needed that to be and I needed Brendan to have a more explicit apology to Fox.
Well, I wanted Piper to have a conversation yeah. with Hannah of like, and you know what,
that's I would have been mad,
but it's also like I can understand, like, if I were in Piper's situation, like, I would probably have concerns as well. But you have a conversation and then you respect them and their yeah. decision. So, like, I'm not upset that Piper and Brendan cared enough to, like, have those conversations. I think what I needed was that Piper and Brendan, either together or individually or whatever, talked with Hannah and Fox. And they were able to say, like, no, this is our decision. This is why. Like, this is who we, you know, kind of gave their reasoning and their history behind it. And then have Piper and Brendan, like, really support them and encourage them in that. So, I think one of the things that, the reason why I liked this book so much and, like, I'm not more upset with the ending is because it really does feel like it just ended too early mm. instead of like, because you know
they it wasn't went, a bad ending
right and they went through all that work. I just wish that we got to see it, you know, like that. And it, I think I'm making it a much, I feel like I'm like ragging on it a little bit when it is such a small qualm for me personally, but I think because of the complexity of Fox and just like it's so sad that you're like, you just want to win for the guy. Like, you just want to see him not only believe in himself, but know that there were other people out there that believed in him other than Hannah. And so.
And see him flesh out more believing in himself.
Yeah.
Because absolutely. It is not 100%. Like, he took the first step
yes.
at the end of the book. It yeah. was not the last step.
Right. Absolutely.
So. Can we talk about the fact that you are a plot-driven
yeah.
reader, and this book had very little plot.
Very little plot.
No plot.
And a whole lot.
A whole lot of feelings.
And character development.
A whole lot.
And I truly think the only reason why I vibed with it was because of Hannah.
Yeah.
And, like, it felt like I was just reading my own thoughts mm. on a page. Because, yeah, usually I'm like, I don't want to hear people's thoughts. Just give me plot. And so I think yeah, that was like the, if it were any other thought process, I'd be like, I did not like this yeah. book, you know.
correct me if I'm wrong, because again, it's your brain, not mine.
You probably know it better than I do at this point.
There were some pieces. So Hannah's whole narrative is she wants to be the leading lady and not be the support, which is a beautiful, of course, everyone deserves to have their main character moment and stuff. I wanted a little bit more percentage of the fact that being a helping person, someone that cares for others, is a main character trait.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost like and neither narrative is wrong, because her standing up for herself and putting herself first and taking care of her own needs and saying, like, what is best for me in a leading lady, quote unquote, role is correct.
Yeah.
I needed that to happen. But I also wanted her to almost realize that, like, because what her helpfulness, her kindness, and the way she cares and takes care of others is a leading lady characteristic. Mm-hmm. It is not you're the supporting character. Yes, supporting characters do that.
Right.
But they don't cancel each other out.
Yes.
Because the helpfulness is, like, if that's a foundational piece of her, like, if she finds life in helping others, she finds joy in helping others, and she's good at it, and it brings out her best features and her why others love her. It can still exist within a leading lady characteristic. And helping Fox or helping Piper or helping the band or helping the crew, those are not supporting character exclusive traits.
Right.
They're leading lady character traits too.
I totally agree with you. I think the one reason why it didn't necessarily bother me in this situation, because I think I am very, like, sensitive to that as well, where it's like, anyone can be helpful. Yeah. Anyone can be
I wanted her to know that she was valuable as she was, that she didn't have to change to be a leading lady.
Which I think is something that I liked about Fox, because he saw that. It wasn't like he only saw her when she had her leading lady moments, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, the cardigan comes off, the glasses come off. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you're beautiful. You know,
a
not
princess.
Right. It wasn't like that. It was, he saw her the whole time. But I think also because it was in a movie production setting that, like, that tracked. And then also to have a sister like Piper, who is, like, so big and, like, you know, just the life of the party and has a beautiful, big personality, that, like, I think most people, if you're around Piper, like, she's going to be the leading lady and it's going to feel like you're the supporting character. But what I loved about Hannah is that she never felt like she never had any sort of resentment towards Piper for being the leading lady. And she didn't want to take the spotlight away from Piper.
Yeah.
She didn't necessarily feel like she needed to ask Piper to share it. It was just she wanted, in her area where she wanted to shine, she just wanted to shine, you know? And so I think the ways that she sought for being a leading lady, and it was more just like, no, I'm going to stand up for myself and I'm not going to wait for someone else to vocalize what I need or deserve. I'm going to do it myself. Because I think oftentimes, and I'm not going to speak for everyone, this is just me personally, that sometimes when you feel like I'm a supporter, you're trying to look for what those undersaid, like, non-stated needs are of other people, and then you're going to be the one to say them, and then maybe have that expectation that other people will do that for you, but, like, they can't read your minds. Like, you can't expect them to be like, oh, I wonder if that's an area that she really wants, so I'm going to, like, you know, say that for her. That just because you might be looking for that in someone else, you can't expect someone else to be looking for that in you. And so I liked that she was like, so I'm going to do that for myself. Mm. Like, I'm going to go and speak up for myself, or, you know, like, do something that's scary, or, you know, some quote unquote might be a leading lady moment.
She wasn't trying to change other people to get them to recognize her. She was trying to empower herself.
Yes. And she wasn't trying to change herself either. She was like, these are things that I know I can do,
that I'm good at.
Right. And I'm like, I want to pursue this. Yeah. Like, I want to go after it. And, you know, like, I don't know. So I think, like, I appreciated that it wasn't. And even when she asked Piper for the makeover, it still didn't feel like, oh, I'm trying to change myself intrinsically of who I am and become someone else. It was just more of like, I want to highlight things that are already there that I might not have the skill myself to highlight, but, like, I know someone else who is, like, I'm going to ask for help in that.
Give Piper the chance to support her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think Piper really does want to support Hannah. And, like, you really see that. I mean, especially when they're with Opal and she shifts that moment back onto Hannah instead. Like, Piper is not a self-absorbed person. I think she is very aware of other people. Yeah. And like, she wanted to share that with Hannah, which I thought was very sweet. And so, I don't know. I really liked that, like, this was something that Piper, or that Hannah wanted to work on in herself, but she wanted to still stay true to herself. And it wasn't, people only see me when Fox saw her the whole time. You know, so there, I just think it was almost kind of like your classic 2000 rom-com moment, but, like, done better. Yeah. Like, done in what I would consider
a very fine line to walk, and Tessa walked it
so well. I mean, because there were some things that could be very difficult to walk, and she did a really great job.
I truly think it's interesting, after talking to her and after, you know, we see her TikToks and all this stuff, and she's a funny human being, but truly, after reading a lot of her books, I'm of the impression that Tessa Bailey might be one of the most emotionally intelligent human beings, because it takes a lot to create characters that have different emotional experiences and do them all justice and to constantly be trying new ones and seeing, like, I think, yes, she's funny and haha, and she does her bangs in weird ways, but, like, and she makes, like, anatomy diagrams and puts them in her, like, yes, haha, funny, but, like, emotionally intelligent and puts it on paper well.
Really, really well. I sent you this, I can't remember if it was last night or this morning, but she was filming her, gosh, I'm getting freaking emotional. She was filming herself telling the epilogue of this book to her husband, and she got emotional. Like, watching her get emotional made me emotional, because it was so fun reading the epilogue. It was still so light and funny, but, like, so feel good and, like, warm and fuzzy at the same time. And you're just like, wow. But, like, seeing her as an author be like, this is the end of this series. Like, this is the end of the road, and I'm wrapping it up, and I'm telling everyone that, like, it is a happily ever after. And I don't think I love epilogues that often, like, in this kind of sense. I loved this one. I don't know what, I think it was just so simple.
Yeah.
That, like, and it was just so happy, and it was just the right amount. And, oh, so anyway, I got emotional about that one.
I like the epilogue as its own thing. Again, I think if I had seen more journey, I think the epilogue would have just been that much sweeter, because you see them get to the happily ever after decades of work.
Right.
So I again, that feeling of abruptness of, like, I can't believe we're already at the epilogue kind of thing, but not because it wasn't sweet, but because I wanted to see how we got to that sweetness and how we got to that. So
seeing that Piper and Brendan named their son Henry,
I didn't pick up on it until I watched the TikTok.
I didn't either.
I was like, oh wait, their dad's name is Henry.
And she was like, and they named him Henry, of course. And I'm like, of course.
Can we talk about that? And we didn't get enough fleshed out in either book of their stepdad.
I was so glad that they were not in it.
Their stepdad raised them from, like, age 4.
Mm-hmm.
And he just gets, like, bloop, blushed. Both dads got kind of bloop, blushed, brushed under the rug.
I'm not going to lie, though. When I finished the epilogue and it just said that Piper and Brendan and their two kids showed up, I was like, I don't know what this says about me, but I'm grateful that, like, the stepdad and their mom was not invited.
Like, I'm sure the mom went through a lot of trauma, but absolutely. She, again, I said this in the last episode, if my spouse takes my two children that I have invested and raised for 4 years of their life and just forgets about me after I die and, like, doesn't include me in their lives at all, I would be mad. I will haunt you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, there was just, I think that was one of the delightful things about Hannah and Piper being older, because I think Piper's, like, 28, right?
Yeah.
And so I think Hannah's probably, like, what, 25? I think having them be older and, like, not be young adults and still under their parents' roof, I mean, they're pseudo under their parents' roof in the two books, but I think, like, also knowing that they're adults and they can make their own decisions, like, there was a freedom in that that mm-hmm. I think I appreciated.
Yeah. Yep.
But
plot so secondary in this book, but I guess we can talk about it.
I love the roommate. I love the roommate tension. Like, especially like both of them are, I mean, the fact that both of them already knew that they were attracted to each uh-huh. other, delicious tension for me. And then the helping her get Sergei's eye. I loved that that was super secondary.
Yeah.
That, like, she didn't have to, like, I don't think about it too much. It just very naturally shifted to Fox. And then Sergei was kind of like, Sergei who? I don't know.
Yeah.
It there wasn't a lot of angst about that. And I think I appreciated it.
I also appreciate that it wasn't like some makeover or whatever. It was yes, it was kind of a cheesy tactic of like, let's show him what he's missing. But reality is like Hannah didn't change. Hannah didn't do, besides maybe speaking up for herself a little bit more, all of her skills were the same. Mm-hmm. She was the same exact physical description. Mm-hmm. She was doing the same exact job. She didn't change herself in any way, shape, or form to get Sergei. Sergei just finally had an incentive to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't creepy.
No.
He was appropriate. I was worried that it was going to get to the point where it was like, you denied me, and therefore I'm not going to let you have uh-huh. this role in the job. Uh-huh. None of that occurred. And it was so sweet that it was just like I'm separating this personal like interest in you from a professional interest in you. And he didn't push, and he wasn't creepy, and he didn't come on, or he didn't grab her butt, or anything like that. It just was like I'm expressing verbal interest, and I'm accepting your no when you give it to me. That made it much easier to appreciate the Sergei side of the plot versus you, naturally, I think authors would create something creepy or icky that you would want to hate so that you're more inclined to like the actual mm-hmm. love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it made Fox that much more attractive because she was turning Sergei down as he was, not as a creepy director boss person.
Yeah, I completely agree.
The music. With her finding her own band that she really liked and then, like, making it her career to put indie bands, that was so perfect.
And, again, Tessa Bailey with the depth. I mean, like, come on. I loved the turmoil. Because we talked about this, and it happened one summer. Of, you know, we were really interested in seeing Hannah have a relationship with Opal. And we were kind of trying to figure out, like, why it seemed like Piper had more of a deeper connection with Opal than Hannah does. And then it's almost immediately explained. And then you're like, well, of course. Yeah. Like, of course Hannah feels that way. But then for her to have her own
unique,
like, this is where I get it from, and I get to share that with my dad. And then, like, even Hannah acknowledging that Cross and Daughters was for Piper, but she was just supporting and encouraging and being there for her sister to make that part of her relationship with her dad come true. Mm. That then Hannah got her own version of that, and it was still uniquely her own. And even the little, like, blimp of Fox being included in it and singing. But then, because I was like, oh, is she going to get Fox and all of the crewmen to sing it? And, like, that's going to be the, you know, score for the film. But then, like, having it go in the direction of her career, it was just so good.
Especially for me. At the very beginning, Hannah almost has a protectiveness over the music of like, no, this is mine.
Yeah.
That spoke to my four self where I was like, mine. Like, no, this is my thing.
Yeah.
But then it didn't uproot her love. It just grew it.
Yeah.
And they found a happy medium where it forged a connection to her dad. And it was so tastefully done without undermining what is uniquely Hannah's. And how she took it and made it uniquely her own. Of like, it wasn't, she didn't rely on the foundation and let it make itself. She took the foundation and made it her own.
Yeah. I think one of the other things that I think I just, like, intrinsically admire about Hannah is, I mean, her work ethic. Mm. And the fact that she was like, I'm not gonna depend on my stepdad and his notoriety and fame to get me a job. Like, I'm gonna do the grunt work from the ground up. And that being a decision that she made on her own, because that did seem like it would be something that, like, her stepdad might enforce. Like, it felt like it could be an idea that he had. Obviously,
like, no, you'll pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah, and obviously he didn't. But I think I appreciated that Hannah walked into that, even with the well of knowledge that she had about music, she was still like, no, but I can learn from other people, and I want to learn from people. And I just think that, like, I don't know, just that humility, I think, is such a attractive quality. And I just, I don't know, I loved it. And then she learned, and she did the whole, like, her having to hold the straw for the ad, like, it's so funny. I mean, like, but, oh, man, I kind of liked their dynamic, the way that they, like, verbally berated each other, but, like, clearly, you know, they admired each other and, like, not even begrudgingly respected, but just kind of, like, I don't know. I thought it was so funny. So freaking funny. I'm trying to remember the plot of this book.
I don't think there's much else.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. When she walks into the apartment for the first time and he had gotten her a pink comforter and the pink Himalayan salt lamp, and he had, like, gone and found things that he thought she would like, and then how he had a secret cupboard for his records. And, like, he could have used that at any time to win points for himself, and he didn't. Like, she had to find out about it from her old boss at the record store. Fox is just a wholesome character. I think one of the things that I also really liked, and again, I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum in this. This is merely a plot device that I don't enjoy reading in books, is that, like, when he got scared and tried to use intimacy as a wall, essentially, I appreciated that he didn't run to other women, and that he, I don't know if it's, like, the uniqueness of me or whatever, you know, maybe my little four coming out, but the fact that, like, from the moment he met Hannah, he had stopped seeing other women.
Oh, yeah, that does things for me.
Yeah, it does things for me, too. Like, that even though there wasn't any sort of, like, understanding or any expectation, they were truly just friends. And he, like, still just made that conscious decision of, like, there is no one else who can, like, even interest, catches my eye. Yeah. But then when things got scary, that he didn't, like, go back to Seattle and like, try and, you know, be with anyone else. I think that was something that just endeared me to Fox even more.
Yeah.
Because, like, it very easily could have been that.
And I appreciate that. In the book, you kind of get the impression, and it happened one summer, that maybe his promiscuity is not something that Hannah is interested in. But she never uses it as a weapon against him. She never slut shames him. Mm-hmm. Ever. And never even makes jokes about, like, how he knows how to do all of this stuff because he's so experienced, or yada, yada, yada.
She or just uses his number against him. Mm-mm. Like, it never even seems like a point of insecurity.
Like, they don't even, never thinks about it. So it's literally just, like, she's starting fresh with him, and she does not let either of their past dictate, and she lets Fox navigate that on his own.
I agree. I think if that's a conversation that you want to have with your partner, that's well within your right to do that. But I agree. I think that was something that, like,
it was important for Fox's growth.
Yes, absolutely. I just, like, I can't get over the complexity of this book. And just, like, I feel like there was a lot of moments of mind reading, you know, where Hannah was just able to be like, well, I know where Fox is coming from, and I know he's trying to do this, and I know he's trying, and you're like,
I'm gonna need you to say those words out loud.
But honestly, like, it worked for me. I was like, it worked for the story, and especially when, like, like, she wakes up in the morning and it's clear that, like, he had been having me time And he recommended the me time to her, like, that she's able to be like, I can tell that he's using this as a tool to, like, push me away, which, like, sure, you might be able to infer those things on your own. But she came to the conclusion very quickly and very definitively. I don't know. There was just something about it that she, like, made up her mind and she was just like, no, like, this is it. Like, I've made up my mind and I'm going to be there. And I think the fact that, like, you know, when he did go and have that conversation with his mom, I don't really understand why he fell asleep. That part, like, seemed a little weird that he, like, was like, okay, now I'm tired and I'm going to take a nap.
I think it was probably an adrenaline crash.
Yeah. And, I mean, very well may could have been. But the fact that, like, he was so scared that she had left and he had missed his chance and she was just sitting on the floor listening to records and he just watched her for a second, like...
It was cute. I almost needed, like, a chase scene.
Really?
Yeah.
And the reason that I liked it was because, like, and maybe I just haven't read enough books, or I read all similar books and similar plot lines, but, like, that felt like something that is very typically written for male characters. Of they're like, nope, I made up my mind, you're it, I'm gonna wait until you decide that you're all into. And because I think lots of times, like, you know, you're all in your head or something like that, and you're trying to suss things out and figure out, like, where you want to, what decision you want to make. But for Hannah, she was, like, very quickly, like, nope, I'm all in, and this is it. And I think I appreciated that Fox got to see someone who saw him for who he was and not what he could offer and was like, I am here and there is nothing you can do to scare me away. Like, your crewmates might not stand by you or might not, like, admire you right now, but what you are giving me now is enough and I'm in.
I agree. That was the moment where the recovery for Fox was too fast for me.
Yeah. Yep,
so
yep, yep.
I didn't want Hannah to change her mind or second guess or, like, I was perfectly comfortable with her being confident. And in that, I almost needed her to say, like, to, like, leave a note on the door or on the bed or something that says, like, I'm still in. I'm going to get my stuff and I'm going to move to Seattle or something like that. Call me when you're ready. Because it was a less than 5-hour turnaround for Fox to go from no, I'm ending this to no, I want to be all in it and I'm on a time crunch kind of thing. I needed him to have more time to process that trauma response and do something like say, I found a therapist, I'm going to work on this. Let's think more long term. So I still wanted Hannah's commitment to your point of, like, Hannah being the one that's steadfast.
Yeah.
But her being like 6 hours, I think, was enough. I was like, it really, really wasn't. Like, it's really, really was not enough time. Yeah. So something else where she assured him, I didn't leave because I wanted to leave you. I left because I'm going to get my stuff to come back. Right. Or I left so that I can tie up loose ends here and we can go on for a longer future instead of the just like, all my stuff's left in California kind of thing. So I needed a little bit, again, more time so that the growth was logical.
Yeah. And I wonder if she didn't do it because Brendan and Piper had a chase scene, you know, like, he went all the way to LA for her. So maybe she didn't want to, like, reuse a plot device. I don't know. I will say this. You mentioned this at the beginning of the episode. I agree. I wish that all of that had been shifted to the 75% mark. And then we get to see 25, 40% of the book be, you know, everything afterwards. Yeah. And I think I would have minded that because I think oftentimes we read romances and there's a very clear...
They get together, culmination.
Yes, and then something happens, you're like, you're like, okay, they're together, and it's at 75%. Something bad's gonna happen. Like, but then they're gonna come together in the last, like, 5%, and everything's gonna be happy. You know, like, I think there's a very consistent template. And I wouldn't have minded if this template changed.
Yeah.
Where it was, all of this stuff happened in the first 60% of the book, and then they're in an established relationship. Yeah. And they're talking about what sex will look like for them, especially, you know, if Hannah has a lower libido than Fox. Like, those kinds of conversations. Or Fox
feels obligated because it's what he's wired to do.
And, like, those are conversations you have to have. I mean, like, I didn't know that. And, you know, then you have those conversations and you're like, there's no rule book for this kind of thing. And so I wouldn't have minded that in a book, kind of like showing that aspect of like, you are now an established couple and like, this is what it's going to kind of look like. And then you get to see the 10 years down the line, everyone's happy kind of situation. So I don't know. I would love it if Tessa would release like more snippets. And she might, I don't know. We should have asked her.
Sure. I don't think so, given the epilogue, but
this is a duology that is like perfectly wonderful.
Yeah.
And like, I loved both of them, which doesn't happen all the time, but I also would love more.
Yeah.
But I respect that there's not at the same time.
I always prefer to be left wanting more than to wish they had stopped.
And you're like, yeah, stop. Pump the brakes. No more, please. But yeah, anyway. I just loved it. I just loved it a lot.
Yeah.
Just loved it a lot.
Yeah.
Trying to think, what other scenarios happen that's worth the bingo? That was funny. I enjoyed that scene.
It's cute.
And especially how the mom like talked about how there were the two people there, that he had been married to her sister and she had died, and how they had sat on opposite sides for way too long. And then they decided they didn't want to miss any life together.
Yeah.
Now they're in the front row. Why is this book using bingo to be so touching?
Talk about another random career that Tessa, bingo caller.
So funny. So we had the incredible honor of interviewing Tessa Bailey last night, and that episode will come out next week after this one. And y'all,
there's some golden nuggets in there.
We had so much fun. So much fun. I think I even cried.
Yeah, you did.
I think
did.
I cried multiple times, actually.
I think you kind of shocked her a little bit. She was like, are you crying?
Yeah.
You were like, yeah, I am.
I'm sorry.
It happens.
I just get really emotional sometimes. Do you have anything else to add?
Wow.
Y'all, I can't get over how much I love this book. Even talking about it has made me love it even more.
Yeah.
Just something special. Well, what books have you been reading since we did It Happened One Summer?
Only one.
Yeah.
Regrets. I read The Stopover. I don't even remember it's part of the Miles High Club. It's the very first book.
That revelation yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
It's by T.L. Swan.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
It was terrible. I'm so sorry to say that if it was a book that you really enjoyed. I had some very, very good, like, belly laughs. Like, I laughed so...
Weak arm bellies?
So hard.
I love a good weak arm belly. I'm trying to check and see where I left off in the leg. This happens every week. You would think I would learn.
You've read, like, so many books.
Okay, let's see. Description of the episode. I think I finished at House of Sky and Breath. Okay. You think I would learn.
You've read 7,000 books since then.
Hardly. I did read Just Haven't Met You Yet by Sophie Cousins, which is another little rom-com. And it was our February Patreon book buddy read. And I ended up really enjoying it. I thought it was kind of cute. The main character's pretty... She makes some questionable decisions. But at the same time, I think it adds to the story and like her growth, because she gets from one extreme to the other. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was cute. I then read our March book buddy read, and it's Dead Moon Rising by Jack Whitney. Now, this is an adult fantasy. I do this every time. It is an adult dark fantasy romance. And it's very dark, so definitely check out the trigger warnings. However, I really enjoyed it. Like, I was kind of shocked.
I started it today.
You did?
I read the prologue or whatever it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was very pleasantly surprised by the ending. I hope that doesn't ruin anything for you. But I had a really great time reading it, and I'm really excited because for our patrons, we do a monthly book buddy read date chat on Zoom, and Jack Whitney's joining us, so we're gonna get to get her thoughts and everything on writing the rest of the series and everything. So I'm super, super excited about that. I then read Gallant by B.E. Schwab. I'm very curious to see if I vibe with V.E. Schwab's writing or not, because I haven't loved The Invisible Life of Abby LaRue or this one. And I think one of the reasons was for this one, the protagonist was like 13 or 14 years old. So it felt like a children's book, but it was also very dark. And I wouldn't have been able to read it as a child. So it's like, I'm an adult reading about a 13-year-old, and yeah, I don't know. For some reason, it just didn't quite vibe with me. Then I read The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. I thoroughly enjoyed it. If you want to read it, please check out Trigger Warnings, because it does talk a lot about suicide and suicide ideation and a lot of heavier and darker themes. I know that this book is not for everyone, and not a lot of people have enjoyed it for their mental health journey, which is totally understandable, and I respect that so much. But I personally really enjoyed it. I think it talked a lot about just extending grace to yourself. And I think for some reason that just like really resonated with me. And then I read These Hollow Vows by Lexi Ryan. I didn't love it. Yeah, I mentioned this in our YouTube video, but if this had come out in 2009, I think we would have really loved it. But love triangle, the main character felt a little bit like a pick me girl, like, I'm not beautiful. And then she's in a love triangle, and I'm not like other girls. I wear pants, you know? And a lot of the plot just felt very convenient. However, I'm a little bit angry because I did like the concept. Like, I liked what was in the head, not what was on the paper. And so I just don't know if I'm going to read the sequel, because of course it ended on a cliffhanger. So we'll see. I don't know. It's not going to be a priority. And then last night I finished For the Wolf by Hannah F. Witten. I have no idea what happened for at least 25% of that book. I have no idea. So I think I liked it. There were parts that felt really, really slow, and then parts that felt really, really rushed. And so I was just kind of like, I don't know what's going on. I loved the concept and the idea, but I just don't think I got it for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know if it was the headspace I was in or what, but I didn't get it. I was literally, as I was finishing it, I was like, I don't know what's going on right now. Like, are we there? Are we here? Did they move? Like, when did this happen? So there were just a lot of logistical questions I think I had. And then I started Vespertine by Margaret Rogerson this morning. And I think I'm only like 20 pages in. I'm liking it. I mean, it's essentially about like a nun who like can control spirits, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of Grave Mercy by Robin Lefevers, I think, is the author, which is like essentially about killer, like death controlling nuns too, but in the 14th century France, which that's always exciting. But yeah, so not a whole lot of books that I felt like I gave a very positive review on. Yeah, so I'm kind of needing like a really good one because we're about to start War of Two Queens. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which maybe we'll be surprised.
Maybe. Maybe.
All right. Well, on that note, that is it for this episode. We really hope you enjoyed it. Please feel free to go check us out on Instagram over at the Bibliovert Podcast. We would love to hear your thoughts on Hook, Line, and Sinker by Tessa Bailey. So please feel free to DM us. We also have a Patreon that is just filled with a really great community, and it's just so wonderful. So if you're looking for a bookish community, definitely check us out. We also have a lot of fun perks and Patreon exclusive episodes, obviously our book buddy read that happens every month. So feel free to come join our family. We'd love to have you. And then we also have a YouTube channel called The Bibliovert, where we have videos that come out every single week. And we just get to talk about books, have a really great time, do some challenges. And yeah, it's just a blast. Yeah. So check that out. Yeah. But we hope you have a fantastic week. Happy reading. And we will see you next time.